Against all better judgment, I'm going to take a couple of minutes and share a little anecdote with you that has nothing to do with the reading this morning, but has everything to do really with why we come to church. And I say against all better judgment because I have just only a certain amount of time, but here we are. Yesterday, a small group of us, went on a hike together. We do this occasionally in lieu of a Saturday class, and it was wonderful. We went to a park that I'm sure many of you know in Woodside called Wunderlich Park, and we hiked, and you're in a forest the whole time. You're walking up a redwood. There's a lot of redwood trees, cypress, eucalyptus groves, but you're definitely in a forest. And then when you get to the top, you just suddenly you take a step, and you're in this exquisite plateau, wide open meadows. It just happens very suddenly. And it was a gorgeous day yesterday, as I'm sure many of you know, and you have this view of the bay, and we decided we would sit up there and have our lunch. So we sat to meditate first, and we had a prayer, and then I said, who has some chants on their phone? Because, of course, everybody has a phone, and everybody has chants on their phone. And then people started saying, what do you want to hear? And nobody was saying anything, and I was thinking in my mind, I really hope we can sing Who is in my temple. But I didn't say it out loud. I don't even know why I didn't say it out loud. But there was a little shuffling because several people had their phones. But I kept thinking, oh, I hope somebody decides to play Who is in my temple. But they didn't. And last night I went home and I had this, just a hunger to hear it. It's an interesting thing. I almost never have that. So I decided I would play it myself. But I have a limited repertoire with the harmonium that's not in it. That very quickly became aggravating. And so I didn't. But I played my very favorite chant, Tuameva Mata. And we have nothing to do with what chants are played. This is strictly up to the musicians. But I assume that Janice thought that she was choosing the chants when she chose Who is in my temple, and Tuameva Mata. And you know, I just share it with you because it is what we're doing here. It doesn't matter what the subject is today. Here we are finding ways to stay in touch with, in tune with the fact that God is in everything, in everyone, making all decisions, meeting even our smallest needs like that. So for 12 hours, not even, I put out I had a desire to hear this chant. And here's Janice thinking that she's deciding what chant would go, and they're my chants. It's so touching. It's just so deeply touching just how much God loves us and how much God is with us. And as we try and make our way through these more complicated readings, just those little moments happen, and then you say, oh, Master, you're just right there with me. Last week, we had a very interesting and wonderful, I will say wonderful, experience in our community. We had a guest teacher come whose name was Brahmrishi Patraji. That was announced here many times. I don't think any of us had ever met him, but we had received a letter some time ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, from a very dear friend of Ananda. His name is Sri Kartikeyan. I know his name very well, but the last few times I've gone to say it. He's a very dear friend, a very wise and prominent man in India who heard Swamiji at some point. I'm not even sure how they met, Swami Kriyananda. And that was it. He was with us. And he had a lot of friends all over India, I will say. But he helped Swamiji. He helped clear the way for these teachings. I wouldn't even say it was personal. But let me just say he was a dear friend and very helpful. And Swami Kriyananda often said that they were like brothers. That's what he said. So when he wrote to us and asked us to invite this man or host this man to give a program, I mean, there was just no doubt but that we would do it, of course. And he wrote about him very beautifully. So I actually received many of those notes. Not everybody did. But I was sort of the chosen point person to help make this event happen. So I was in a lot of communication, not with him, but with his disciples and with other people from India who wanted this to go well. And anyway, he came last Monday. He's a man who teaches all over India. He has his particular way that he teaches, but what he's really trying to do is to get people all over the world, not just all over India, to meditate. And I will say, from all accounts as they presented it, he's been very successful. So he shows up at our community, and everything is just set. I tried to say to myself, what would people do for him in India? Beautiful chair, flowers, just everything set up in a lovely way. But when he arrived with his entourage, it was really hit me how perfectly Indian he was. I mean, Indian through and through. Now, we don't have a lot of that on our path, because that was not what Master came. That was not what Master came to teach us. He didn't come to teach us how to live these teachings in an Indian way. We do some Indian chants, but not a lot. They're in English. We don't play all the instruments they play. We just have a totally different, the word is bhav, you know, it's energy about us. And Master really was helped to move, Master means Paramahansa Yogananda, into a more Western way, so that it felt like us, to us, and we could more easily embrace these teachings. But I happen to have spent a lot of time in India in this life, and I think a lot of time in India before. I just feel completely at home there. But as I was listening to him, I was saying, oh boy, I could just see what was going to go on for a lot of the people who were sitting there. In fact, right after the program, a friend of mine who is an Indian woman came up to me and she said, oh, I was so glad you were here, Shanti. I thought you might be the only person, she meant American, Western person here, who would understand him. She was so anxious. He was saying things like, if my students open their eyes, when I tell them to close their eyes, I go over and I hit them with my flute. And I'm thinking, okay, in India, you could just feel like you got darshan. But in the U.S., that's considered abuse, you know. And he's announcing to us when he became enlightened and how six lifetimes ago Buddha himself initiated him. And he's just talking about it. And then he's really approaching all these teachings from a very, he says, the ideas that he presented were to be serious about the path, to be scientific about the path. Many things that would look like they were in direct contradiction to how we're taught. He said, lean back when you meditate. He said, none of this sitting up uncomfortably. Cross your legs, he said. Hold your hands like this. Well, this is not what we teach. This is not how we were taught to teach meditation. I loved the man. I felt so given to by him. And I watched after the service. I watched him because I was so taken with him. Also because I was the point person for the event. So I was sort of taking care of him and his, again, a big entourage of mostly Indians. He had an encounter with many different people that was so particular to them. It was so incredibly unique and perfect. And somehow I knew that. I have a very dear friend who just loves to engage in, I don't think it's intellectual discourse, but who loves to be of the mind, who approached him a couple of times with the same question. It was a question that was going to have to be addressed logically, rationally. He would have none of it. He just starts writing it off, like saying, talking about things that seemed almost to my friend nonsensical. Almost like, why is he talking to me about this? But in essence, I really heard him saying, no, we're not going there into your mind. I myself went up to just say to him, oh, Patriji, I got that far, just like that. Oh, Patriji, that was my stance. He just bent down and touched my feet. I was absolutely beside myself. I'm thinking, what do? I just immediately brought my hands here. But when he went to leave whatever he and I were doing, I did touch his feet, which is not just the Indian way, but it resonates deeply in me. We were never allowed to do that with Swamiji. And what did he do? He looked at me right into my eyes. He didn't say a word, but it was so powerful. This is instantaneous. And then he bends down and he touches my feet a second time, saying to me, God is in all of us, Shanti. One of the main messages that he tried to share that night, go within. You can solve all of your problems within. Well, the next morning, we had a meeting, that regular meeting that we have, and there were, I don't know how many of us there, at least 15. And people had very different feelings about him initially. But what was very interesting about this meeting is that by the end of an hour, we talked about nothing but Patriji for an hour and what people got and how he shared. The whole room went from a little doubt here, a little doubt there, to this incredibly uplifted feeling. A room filled with joy coming through a teacher who looked so dramatically different than we did. Of course, he's teaching in India, and there's a lot that came out of that discussion that is relevant here because these teachers present at different times, in different places, in different languages, different cultures. We've said all of this a lot based on the need, based on our need, based on what we need. So we didn't need, nor were we able necessarily to learn in the way the Patriji was teaching, but did it make it any less of the truth? He's teaching Indians, who somebody pointed out the next day, are filled with devotion. Maybe they need a little science. Maybe they need a little bit of the West coming to them. But who are they going to receive it from? Not a Westerner, but from one of their own who's hitting them on their hands or on their head with the flute. If they open their eyes, he plays the flute when he meditates. It was just so perfect and so perfectly what Swamiji is saying in this reading. You know, he mentions this, the opening and dedication page of the path, where, and the quote in the reading is, the lives of all saints manifest in various ways the same one God. And that, of course, is the whole reading of the Bible. Jesus is saying, why would you have thrown them out? Just because they didn't look like us? Just because they didn't use our language? If they're not against us, they are with us, he said, as he rebuked his disciples. But interestingly, the very first line on the dedication page of the new path, where Swami says, to the sincere seeker, whatever his chosen path, which is so beautiful. So he says both to the sincere seeker. This doesn't mean make life whatever you want it, do whatever you want, just decide what feels good to you and have at it. He says, if you are truly seeking inner freedom, if you truly want to realize your divine nature in this life, whatever your chosen path, you will open this book called The New Path, and you will find those truths here. And this is how Swamiji, if you read the first couple of chapters of his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, or his commentary on the Bible, this is exactly what he does. He sets up this stage, first of all, beautifully, very different language, I might say, different feeling in the Gita and the Bible, that says what we say every week. These readers say, truth is one and eternal. Realize oneness with it in your deathless self within. Truth is one and eternal. Truth is one, paths are many. Paths are many, the goal is the same. That is the message here. And that's what the reading from the Bible says. And he goes on to talk about, in all of these places, the new path, not right up front in the new path, but eventually up front in the Gita and in the Bible. Am I on here? Okay, sorry. I just felt to leave for a moment. I didn't mean am I on as in on, I meant on. This whole notion of the whole teaching of Sanatan, which means eternal, Dharma, which means truth. It means duty, in a way, our duty, and I'm going to talk about this because these two readings just go like this. You have to take them both together, the reading from the Bible, today in my mind, even more so than other times, and the reading from the Gita are just so quintessentially wrapped up for our spiritual well-being. But he talks about Sanatan Dharma, eternal truths, those truths that are the very fiber and fabric of all of creation. They don't belong to one religion or another. They belong to all religions. As Swamiji says so often, you never hear the masters arguing with each other. The only difference they perceive, and the only reason we perceive a difference, is again because they come at different times and in different countries, because we couldn't learn as well from Patriji as we can from Yogananda and Swami Kriyananda. But the teachings are exactly the same. Why do we have Jesus up on our altar? So there's no difference here. There is one eternal truth. And whatever path it is, however it presents and whatever you're drawn to, all that matters is, does it lift you up? Does it take you where you want to go? You know, last week Asha mentioned St. Joseph of Cupertino. She talked about him because he worshiped God in the form, Jesus Christ in the form of the baby. But a story from him came to me last night when I was reading this. You know, he was kept in this small room, they call it a cell, which is, of course, what they call a lot of these rooms where these saints lived and meditated. But it's a very small room in the Basilica of St. Francis, because he was such a bother to the church, he just couldn't sit still. He would sit down, and before they'd know it, he'd be up off the ground. He levitated. And, you know, the church did not know what to do with that other than hide him. He was literally locked in. But there's a wonderful story about the ambassador from Sweden coming to see him. The ambassador from Sweden was Protestant, and he came to see St. Joseph, and he was in his room with him, and they just sat down to be quiet together for a little bit. But before you know it, St. Joseph started levitating, and so did the ambassador from Sweden. Can you imagine? This wonderful Protestant, all of a sudden he's up here. And later he remarked to somebody, I came in a Protestant, but I came down a Catholic. Isn't that just the wonderful? I mean, it's really true. It's like, how is he not going to believe? But the point is, whatever it is that lifts you up, that's what brought that story to mind for me. That's what matters on our path, not which path we're on, but what is going to help us live our Dharma, which is where the reading goes now with the Gita. The Gita says, better to die trying to fulfill your own Dharma than to live and be trying to fulfill somebody else's Dharma. And it's really remarkable when you think about it. We are, each and every one of us, completely and totally spiritually unique. There's nothing, there are underlying principles, of course. You know, you won't find a spiritual path where it says, be mean to people, be selfish, hate everyone you can find. Who would do that? Of course not. So those basic principles, which come out in the teachings in different ways, it can be the Ten Commandments, it can be Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, it can be many different ways that they're spoken, they're all really telling us the basic tenets of living on a spiritual life, on a spiritual path. But after that, what we need to do is find a way to communicate with God, with the divine, in such a way that we hear what is our path. Swami Kriyananda was famous for having people come to him, two or three people with the same exact question, and yet answering it differently to each of those people. I myself have this, and I've mentioned it in here before, in such a small way. When people call me and they want to talk to me on the phone, now I have my medical hat on, and before they come to see me, they want to say, how do you approach this problem? And they tell me what their problem is. It might be a cough, it might be high blood pressure, it might be a problem with their partner, it can be anything. And I'm nice, and I say a few words to them to try and encourage them to come in, but I could never tell anybody what I'm going to do with them to help them move down their path, even something as simple as high blood pressure. That's about as simple as medicine gets. But you know, you have to know the person. You don't just have to know them physically, you have to know them emotionally, and you have to know them spiritually before you can offer any advice about where to take the next step. For one person, the answer might be, you need to get more active, you need to do more, you need to serve more. For the next person, input might be, you need to go in, you need to meditate, you need to put the chakras up on your wall, I say to people at times, and breathe from your heart to the heart chakra. How do we develop more devotion? I have a very dear friend who has spent many years trying to convince me that God does not really want her to meditate in this life. And you know, for years, I fought with her. She said, I'm just not meant to sit still. In fact, it's painful to sit still. And yesterday I was thinking, I thought, I owe her an apology, because I realized this, I was sitting with this, that is probably the truth. We're not all made to just, I'll bet you many of us in here know this, to sit still and get perfectly quiet. Maybe the way is to say to that person, let's see how we can keep you active and keep your mind on God while you're doing whatever you're doing. Not that what you have to do is any one given thing. There are as many spiritual paths as there are people, Master said, over and over. I have a couple of things that I want to read to you. I just want to mention one thing. This is going backwards a little bit. It so deeply touched me, and I forgot to mention this before. We all know, of course, that the Pope was just in the United States for a week, and this was so profound for me about different paths. I was born and raised Jewish, as I know some of you were. In my day, there was a very strong Antichrist sentiment. I remember being terrified one day walking into a Christian bookstore. I don't even know now what I was afraid of, but if Christ was anywhere around, I was afraid. I'm not comfortable, really, with the whole... I remember going to the Catholic Church a couple times, and then they told me I had to turn around and shake everybody's hands. And I don't know, I didn't like that very much. So, but here comes the Pope. And here this man is, Abel. I mean, talk about truth is one. And it was just so right under our noses here. There was nothing he said that had anything to do with politics, that had anything to do with race, that had anything to do with religion. He reached out to people sitting in both sides of that Congress. He held kids from Catholic charities that were homeless, and he had dinner at the White House. He went everywhere. He touched everybody. He held the dogma of the church perfectly without ever resorting to dogmatism. It was so beautiful and such a perfect example of what this reading is. He spoke so deeply from his heart that I believe, and I don't know a lot about politics, that he inspired John Boehner to resign. As Speaker of the House, that he felt when the Pope was speaking, there is a place we can all go to. There was a quote in one of the newspapers or on the news, I don't remember where I heard it. The news reporter said 60% of people who are avowed atheists said that they not just feel positively towards the Pope, but they would want to spend time with him. They would want to be in his company. And this reporter said, what can that speak of other than somebody transcending religion? It was just so beautiful. And when he was in that Congress, and I started to say, I feel like whether he knows it or not, everybody's going to ask John Boehner, why? Why do you want to leave? What happened? You know, I mean, I've been in a position in my own life to hear those questions when you have no idea what it is. You're drawn. It's a feeling. You're inspired. There is a place where I can live more peacefully than I'm living coming to these congressional hearings every day. There's something else I need to be doing. This man is conveying to me without words something about deep, abiding inner peace. I don't know what religion John Boehner is. I don't know what religion anybody in that Congress was. But I know that the Pope himself moved in tune with, in accord with, exactly what this reading was about today. I'm going to close by reading to you a letter that I heard Anandi read a long time ago. And last night I looked up that talk of hers and I wrote it down. There was a woman, I don't know who the woman was, nor would I say if I did, who was living in the midst of a very busy life. She had several children. I think maybe living up at the village, but I'm not even sure about that. Who was never quite able, she was never able to meditate as much as she wanted. When Swami Kriyananda passed, she couldn't get her life together to go to the memorial service, meaning maybe the children had needs or something else was calling her. I'm not saying that in any derogatory way. Then she thought, oh, I'll just stay home and watch it. But that didn't work either. And so she started saying to herself, something's wrong with me. I'm just off this path. I'm not a great devotee. I've created too much chaos in my life. But she had a habit of being able to open a book whenever she had a question, one of Swamiji's books or Master's books, and just find a reading. And Anandi said it was uncanny how the reading was always perfect for whatever was going on at the time. So she did that this day when she went home and she was feeling so sad. Now I'm reading this to you based on this teaching about finding our own Dharma, finding that way that the divine is trying to manifest through us to help us literally dissolve anything that is blocking our spiritual progress, anything that is keeping us from knowing that place of inner freedom, from feeling that we are deeply connected to God, and how easy it is to come on any path. I hear it here from people almost every day. I live it myself in certain ways, with all the shoulds, and I have to, and if I were better. Everything this woman was saying, I have to remind myself every day, how is God trying to manifest through you, Shanti? And I have to remember this, not just to find my own path, but even more importantly, as a minister, as a physician, as the manager of this church, so that I don't live in judgment of other people who aren't doing it the way I'm doing it, who might not have the same energy or the energy directed in the same way. And honestly, it's a challenge for me. It is a challenge. So I'm going to close with this reading from Master. This woman just opened a book. I don't know what book it was. This is Master speaking. There is no stereotyped way of promoting spiritual growth. There is no spiritual mill that can turn non-spiritual persons into self-realized souls by the turning of a motor. Everyone has to work out his own salvation according to hints from his inner self after he has been started on the right road by standardized spiritual advice. Be reverent, be content, be self-controlled, meditate, etc. The crowd of tendencies, isn't that a beautiful line? The crowd of tendencies that one is born with then needs slightly different handling in different people. Some inclinations need to be curbed, others tolerated, others fed sparingly, and some, he says, starved out. Master so beautifully saying, do what you need to do to be still, even if it's being active, calmly active for some of you, even if it means being calmly active, be still and know that I am means not necessarily stand perfectly still, not necessarily for everybody sit still, but the know that I am and know thy true self. Only by being willing, able, working at attuning ourselves to God's will as he sees it for us, will we be able to live our Dharma and find that peace that we're all looking for.